We have eyes on the field.
Hey, bada, 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 so we bada.
Eyes at home.
Good moving, you stupid.
Yikes. It's the Field and Stream podcast with Trevor Huth and Tyler Jennings.
And welcome to Field and Stream. My name is Trevor Huth. As always, I am joined by the man with glasses, basically Clark Kent, Mr. Tyler Jennings. Tyler, how's it going, man?
You're not the only one that's called me Clark Kent. My parents call me that all the time.
It's got to be the strong jawline. I don't know. What do you think?
Maybe.
And this is great that I'm talking about your jawline because this is a podcast and nobody can see it. We're joined by our wonderful guest today, Mr. Brennan Delaney. Brennan is a expert of the Blue Jays. And Brennan, why don't you tell us where you're writing, where we can find your work?
You can find me at Blue Jays Nation. I do also work with hockey, but mainly baseball at this point.
Well, Blue Jays, Canada's hockey tracks. I can get that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're going to jump right into some stuff here. We're recording this just before day two of the MLB draft starts. So we don't have any other information on the full draft other than day one. But Tyler, I know that you're one of the big draft guys with us at Prospects Live. I mean, what did you think of day one?
Chaos. There we go. I was waiting for you to do that. No, it was pretty chaotic. We were all anticipating Tamar at 1-1, and it turned out to be Jackson Holliday. Drew Jones went after, and then the Kumar Rocker pick kind of came out of left field, personally. That was something we weren't expecting. And then just from there, it was like we're looking at Kevin Parada fell to 11 at the Mets. Speaking of which, the Mets, really, really good draft. I think we can go into that later, but like, you kind of just look at it, like, Tamar at four is a really good pick. Elijah to the Nationals is pretty good. I didn't like the Jacob Berry pick, personally, mainly because he's just a one-dimensional hitter. There's not really much defense there. Cade Horton was a solid pick. We all knew he was going to be a riser in this draft. Brooks Lee was a good cleanup pick for the Twins. Zach Neto, I wish you weren't with the Angels, but, I mean, I'm still happy about that pick either which way. Go back to the Mets and get Jett Williams at 14. That's a really good two-pick haul after not getting Kumar last year. And then kind of looking farther down, too, is like Brandon Beria. I like that with the Blue Jays. Cooper Jerpy with the Cardinals feels like a pretty good steal. Cam Collier as well. If they can get that signing figured out, I think that's a pretty good pick and a pretty good steal in this at that value, considering we had him probably mocked at like top four even a couple days ago. Then even like farther down, like Eric Brown to the Brewers is a pretty good pick. Drew Gilbert, I love with Houston. Reggie Crawford's a fun pick. Xavier Isaac and the Rays kind of came out of left field again as well. Wasn't really expecting that one. But, I mean, all in all, it was pretty fun watching all the chaos unfold last night. And
chaos!
We're going to get more today, and we're going to hear more of that as well.
Yeah, so, well, two questions for you, Tyler. The first one's quicker, so I'm going to start with that one. You talk about Drew Gilbert. I've been saying this for a while. It seems like a team was going to get kind of a discount Drew Gilbert a little bit later in Jordan Beck. Those two are very similar players, right?
I mean, yeah. So there's some subtle differences. I think Gilbert's got the better hit tool because Beck, being the long-livered person that he is, it's kind of tougher for him to get inside. Yeah. But Beck obviously has more power. Now he's going to be at Coors in the future, so that's going to be fun. They both have pretty similar arms. I think Gilbert may move off of center field in the future. He is speedier than Beck, but obviously that arm plays in right field, and I think that's where Beck had been playing most of the year anyways. So, yeah, they're pretty similar players. I still think Gilbert was the better of the two as the season went on, but either way, it's Drew Gilbert to Houston was fun, and now we get to watch Jordan Beck just crank 500-foot bombs at Coors.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree with you. I mean, it's Gilbert over Beck. It just, those profiles seem so similar, especially, you know, similar positions coming from the same school. It's just kind of a whole thing. And the other question that I want to jump in with real quick, and Brandon, we'll get your take on day one here in a second, is with Zach Neto, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone says, oh, look, he's got a weird setup, but talking to scouts, you know, personally and all that stuff, the weird setup doesn't necessarily matter, does it?
I think as the season went on, we kind of just realized that, like, that setup still works for him no matter what. Like, there was concerns where it's like, okay, maybe he can't hit Vela with that kind of swing because there's a lot of moving parts. He's being held up. He still did very well against Vela. That was, like, 95 and up. Granted, he didn't see much of it, but he just mashed against higher Vela. He does go down to, like, just a normal toe tap, two strikes, and I feel like that might end up being what his swing is if the Angels decide it's like, hey, maybe we should probably tone down the movement a little bit with the swing. But even then, it's like, I still fully believe that they're going to keep that swing because I just it brings personality with it too. Like,
yeah, it does. You're right.
It's a unique swing. Like Eric Brown too has a unique swing for, like, I used the example before. If you remember when you played Wii Sports as a kid, and you tried to put the bat through the invisible head of the Mii. That's kind of just what it looks like. So this is a divisive swing, but in my opinion, I feel like it should stay.
Yeah, and in, you know, the opinion of scouts that I've talked to, he gets to the ball, and that's the important part, right? When you're a hitter, the important part is to hit. So if he can get to the ball, if his hands are good enough, then the setup really doesn't matter as much, is the feeling I get. And I thought that was an important point to make with you talking about how you like Zach Neto. So, Brennan, if you could take your Blue Jays hat off for just a moment, and can we get your reactions to day one?
Chaos.
Chaos.
No, I agree with that. I mean, once Kamara was taken third overall, I blanked out, if I'm being completely honest. It was just a shock. Cam Collier also dropping. I mean, just insane. Same with the Tampa pick. It was out of left field, honestly. It was just unpredictable draft. And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. Yeah, Xavier Isaac, the creative player, as I called him. I did a lot of research going into this draft. I'm not one of our draft guys by any means. I had no idea who this guy was when the Rays took him. You're absolutely right. What did you guys think? And Brennan, we'll start with you on this one. What did you guys think of Gabriel Hughes going to the Rockies 10 overall? That one seemed like a little bit of chaos to me as well.
Yeah, wasn't he? He was slated to go like low 20s, low 10. Low teens and then high 20s, but to Colorado, I mean, didn't expect that. He was definitely the pitcher I was looking at, but I don't know if he's going to do well for the Rockies just with the Coors environment. And I mean, even as like a pitcher, would you even want to play for Coors? But he really came out of nowhere. I think he's a good pitcher, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the Rockies have to draft pitching. They're not going to sign pitching, so they got to take the guys they think have upside. But I don't know. Hughes seemed like a little bit of a reach, Tyler.
A little bit. I mean, I like the profile of Hughes as a power pitcher with a good fastball, even though the shape's kind of a little meh. And the slider is pretty damn good. And it's a full four pitch arsenal. But yeah, you're right. I felt like that's a little bit of a reach at 10. We had thought he was probably going to be like a back end first round kind of guy. So it was interesting. I think the Rockies too also did pretty good. You know, we mentioned Beck at 38, but they also got Sterling Thompson at 31, I do believe. 31. Yeah. And then of course they got Jackson Cox out of Washington who can really spin a breaking ball too. So I think the Rockies did a pretty darn good job last night, even with Hughes being a little higher than we all anticipated.
And Tyler, I'm going to stay with you here. Is Reggie Crawford going to be the best pitcher from this draft? Did the Giants just get a massive steal at the end of the first round?
They got to sign him, but I think that's a really, really good pick. And it's like that guy just committed to transfer to Tennessee not even a week ago. I think it was like 4 or 5 days ago. He just announced that. So I'm pretty sure Tony Vitello was like really wanting to shoot himself on stage with the MLB Network guys. But no, that's like if you get Reggie Crawford back healthy and back to what he was last summer where he was getting up to 101 with a banger slider, pretty usable changeup, that's a fun profile. Is a power pitcher that could start. If he doesn't start, that's a really, really good reliever late in the game. potential closer, I don't know if you can really go wrong. And plus with the Giants too, that it just feels like a Giants pick. Like with the way the Giants have gone recently, with how they produce pitching, that just feels like a match made in heaven.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to get into some team specific questions here. But Tyler, I'll stick with you one more time. What was your favorite pick of the second round?
Favorite pick of the second round.
And now you can include the competitive balance B and comp picks if you want in that too.
Okay, gotcha. So kind of just looking through, I'll kind of just kind of like give you picks that I do like Blake Tidwell at 52. We've talked about in the past where he started the year injured and then he really just didn't perform all that well. Like he had one start above five innings throughout the year, I'm pretty sure. So obviously that hurt his stock a little bit, but getting someone that could be a first round value right there at 52 is really, really good. I do like Josh Kasevich at 60 as well for the Blue Jays, and we'll kind of get into that later, but he was a guy that didn't strike out for Oregon, pretty good back the ball. Another guy too, we're kind of looking at Carson Wisenhunt to the Giants. I know you're a big ECU
fan. My dude.
Yep, there it is. Now, Wisenhunt, if he didn't get suspended this year, probably would be a first rounder. That's my hunch, mainly just with how the college arms were this year.
And that's your Wisenhunt?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Awesome. And that's and he was suspended for PEDs, correct?
It was in part of a supplement that he was taking over the offseason. I'm not sure if that was...
Well, supplement. Yes, that's more fair.
Yeah. That's just how it was listed out whenever they announced everything. But, yeah. No, he came to the Cape, started... It was, like, a little rusty, got hit up a little bit, but stuff was pretty good. It was still 92-95. Curveball looked a little bit better. He could spin it. And then, of course, we all know that changeup. That changeup is disgusting.
So good. Such a good changeup. All right, is there anybody else to round out your list here, Tyler?
Let me look at the comp round real quick.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll tell you who my favorite player was in that group, and that is he went 69th overall in the competitive bounce B round to Oakland, Mr. Clark Elliott. I am a huge Clark Elliott fan. I was really hoping for whatever reason he would be in play for the Tigers at 117 and he can stay in the state of Michigan, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. Also, I don't know why. I just, whenever I watch Elliot, I see a player that looks like he's a future big leaguer. And I don't know. I like Elliot.
I like him too. I think that was a good, pretty good value pick as well. Even if you want to make the, they got him a 69. That's really, really nice. Either way, it was still a very nice pick. I think my favorite from the comp rounds is Tucker Thomann at 77. Got on a White Sox, not podcast, but like I had an interview with White Sox site earlier this week, and I had mentioned Tucker Thomann as the main guy linked to the White Sox. Obviously, the White Sox took Noah Schultz for that first pick, which is a pretty good one in its own right. But Thomann at 77 is incredibly good value. And we'll talk about the Blue Jays draft here in a little bit, but like if you're able to sign Barriera, Kasevich, Tucker Thomann, Cade Doughty, sign all four of those guys, that is probably without a doubt the best draft haul so far in the entire draft.
Not unheard of, because there's a team called the Pirates who did something similar last year.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're all looking at it like they're not signing all of them, and they go, that's what you think. And they get like what? Bubba Chandler, Lonnie White, and just a bunch of names. Solometo came from that draft. I mean, just a ridiculous amount of people. All right, Brennan. Still have your Blue Jays hat off. Some of your favorite picks in that group, second round and beyond from yesterday?
Second round, okay. I was high on Cutter Coffee. He went higher than I thought he would go, but wicked arm for third base and shortstop.
And how do you feel about the Red Sox having now Cutter Coffee and Cutter Crawford?
It's going to be difficult when they both get up in the majors, that's for sure. Jake Bennett was another guy that I was I did recently in one of my articles. He really stood out to me, not just because he's a large adult son, a player over 6'5", but just a wicked fastball, if I could recall on that as well. Connor Prelip, pretty big drop, but I think he was in my first article with who could the Jays select 23rd overall. Just looking at this, I have to talk about the Blue Jays just right quick. I did not expect them to pick Josh Kasevic 60th overall, but I do like that pick after looking at him. And Jacob Mirowski, I believe is it's pronounced. I liked what I saw from him when I wrote about him as well.
Yeah, for sure. Those are some
Mizorowski.
Mizorowski to the Brewers.
Yeah, certainly some fun names there happening in the second round. So, Tyler, we've done this podcast for how long? I still don't know who your favorite MLB team is. So we're going to start with Brennan here. Put your fan hat on. What did you think of day one for the Blue Jays?
Brandon Pereira, just absolutely, I don't know, it was a shock. I really thought they were going to go down Drew Gilbert. They do not have a lot of outfielders, especially in the high minors. So that was it was a pretty big shock to me. But even the fact that they, at least with this regime, with the Shapiro and Atkins regime, they never drafted a high school pitcher first in the first round. So that was a big shock. And
well, okay, so but they've had some luck with pitching lately.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, their arms are a lot of fun right now. So what are you hoping they do with a guy like Barriera?
I think he will probably work on his pitch before even gets to the pro level. Like, I think he may pitch in the FCL this season, but like what they did with Tiedemann and what they did with Irv Carter last season, they didn't play any pro ball, so I could see Barriera going down the same path and maybe developing that the changeup even more. But I mean, he's a guy that can hit 99 with his pitches. Like, it's, you don't find that with a left-hander very often. I mean, they have Kikuchi, but
yeah, I've heard that's good. 99 from a southpaw, absolutely.
That's fantastic. I mean, no, like it was a shock, but it was a good shock.
Really, yeah, hey. Chaos happens, man. It's the MLB draft.
It's chaos.
There's a reason that the best mock drafts get about two picks right a year.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Tyler, how'd you feel about the Prospects Live mock drafts this year?
I mean, Joe knocked it out of the park as usual. I mean, like, the way that we kind of work it out with the mocks is, like, Joe is obviously the guy that's most connected in those his stuff. Like, there's no doubt about it. We always try and chip in to see if we happen to hear something, we relate it to him and everything like that. But it's mainly his work, and he's done a very good job of it. I think we got 4 or 5 right last night, which, I mean, that's good in his own right. I don't think we had the top out of most of, like, the Baseball America guys or, like, Perfect Game or PBR or any of the other guys. But still a solid job all in all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Shout out to Joe E. Doyle. I love that his middle initial is E, because then it sounds like you're saying Joey. Shout out Joe Doyle, though. He does fantastic work. Make sure to give him a follow. All of our draft content is amazing. Of course, Tyler on that team, Ian Smith, you know, a bunch of other people that I'm forgetting at the moment because it's still kind of early in the morning for me, even though it's 11 o'clock. Yeah, so our draft team does great. And Brennan, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Let's go back to the Blue Jays draft.
Oh, even speaking on Mirror, I was actually able to find his high school stats, and His K9 was pretty insane. I think it was up around 16. He limited the walks even. I mean, it's high school pitching. The batting may not be fantastic, but it still stood out to me that he's striking out that many, you know, limits the walks. It's good to see with their first round pick. Like I said, Kasevich, absolutely did not expect him there, especially since just before that, Toman was leaked. After looking at Kasevich, it jumps out as a utility player. Just he's solid at shortstop with the glove, contact hitter. He walked more than he struck out too, which is really what I like to see from a really any position player. So Kasevich, good draft pick.
Yeah, for sure. So that's how they started too. That was what, 2 of 4 picks last night. So they're off to a good start.
I didn't know much about him, if I'm being completely honest. But after looking at, you know, mock drafts and learning more about him, I do really like that pick, and I think that he may see around the infield, except for first base, of course. But yeah. I think it was a good pick.
For sure. So Tyler, let's ask you real quick. When you're coming into this MLB draft, right? If you're listening to this show, you probably already know this, but it works on slot, on bonus pool money, right? And each pick has a slot value. You can go above or under slot. Teams have so much money based on how many picks they have, all this fun stuff. And if you're doing something like the Blue Jays did, where you go Barriera, you know, Kasevich, Toman, and Doughty, you're probably paying over slot a lot here. So what do they have to do to be able to afford all of this?
So I think the first thing that comes to mind is, like, see if Kasevich and Doughty kind of give you a little bit of a discount. Because you know Toman's going to go over slot no matter what. He's an LSU commit. And LSU with Jay Johnson, obviously, that's going to be a lot of money on the table there with NIL. I think you try and get a haircut there. Maybe see if Barriera tries to go a little under slot value as well. I think the slot value for 18 was or sorry, not 18. I'm thinking about the Reds. 23 is like 3 million and some change. See if he takes like 2.75. See if you get a little bit of discount there and put that money towards Toman. And then kind of like today, considering we're you know, recording this before day two starts, see if you can just load up on like highly talented, like college seniors. See if you can get the people to take under slot a lot. So you can save that money up, put a big amount of it towards Toman to get everything kind of signed out there.
And what do you think about the strategy of just take all these high upside guys that might cost a little much right at the jump?
I like it, actually. The way I look at it, we talked about last night in the Twitter space that me, Joe, Will, Rekka, everyone that was part of it. We kind of talked about, like, what would you, like, value more? Is, like, just Drew Jones at 1-1, or would you take a discount at 1-1, then grab someone, like, a big prep arm or something at, like, 33? And I went with, it's kind of, like, a little quality and quantity combined over just one simple little thing. Like, yes, Drew Jones is really, really good, but now you're kind of hampering your effort at 33, see, because now you're kind of handicapped with the bonus pool money. Granted, yes, the Orioles had, like, 17 million in play or something like that, but Drew Jones was going to command closer to like 8.5 to 9 million from what we've heard, and that's kind of going to handicap you just a little bit. Obviously it's not going to hurt you overall with 17 million, the most bonus pool money out of every single club in the league, but it's definitely going to hamper you a little bit. I think Holiday probably commands just a little under 8.5 million. But like they also got Judd Fabian pretty late. That's going to save you a little bit of money. Trying to remember who else they also took. I want to say Dylan Beavers was at 33. If yep. I remember correctly, Max Reiner was 32. So yeah, I think it's kind of just like a, give me a bunch of guys that, you know, you have a bunch of high end guys early and then try and save up as you go along. So that way you can sign all those guys. I like that strategy a lot.
Well, that's the Michael Elias special out there at Baltimore. When you think about him, he takes Kerstad, and I still think he wanted Bitsko, but he ends up getting Kerstad and Westberg 1 year, and then you go Kowser the next year, and it's just he's willing to take those haircuts. And at 1-1, if your haircut's getting Jackson Holiday, I think you're doing all right.
Yeah, and like even with like Jordan Westbrook and Kerstad in 2020, they still came away with Kobe Mayo in like the fourth round or something like that.
Yeah, yep. And then what do you think of Judd? I meant to ask that earlier. Is Judd Fabian like cooked, or is this a good place for him?
I feel like this is about where we expected him to go. Personally, I'm not the biggest fan of Judd. I like the power speed combo and the fact that he could be a very good defender in center field. It's just a matter of how much is he going to hit and how much is he going to strike out. Like, that was his struggle last year, and that's why he wasn't a first-round pick after being, like, a top-five unanimous pick before the year started. And it was kind of the same this year. Like, SEC play this year, he didn't hit very well. He was hitting, like, 200. And I know people are like, well, we don't care about the batting average. It's like, if you're hitting 200 in the SEC with a bunch of strikeouts, that's not really a good look for you, considering how strong of a conference that is in college ball. So you kind of got to take that into effect. Like, Judd Fabian is a big data guy, and I know some people love him for that. But in my opinion, just with how many times, like, I still question the hit tool a lot. I don't know how much he's going to really hit, and the strikeouts are a concern for me. So I'm not really fully in on that profile, but it's a good value pick at 67, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Brennan, we're going to come back here. We went off on a little tangent there, but I want to talk about a couple other teams specifically and fit in our time frame here. So let me just get your overall grade day one for the Toronto Blue Jays draft.
I'd say in terms of value, I'd say it's probably a B plus at the very least, and probably a high A if it were not an A plus, but a high A if you're just looking at it from, oh, they got a bunch of guys that were, you know, top 50 in most rankings. So
yeah, for sure. Tyler, what about you? What's a grade for the Blue Jays draft here?
Let me unmute myself here. I think it's pretty solidly an A. It's one of my favorite draft classes of the entire thing. We mentioned it before. Like, I'm a big fan of Barry Area. I am a big fan of that slider. If I had to grade certain pitches, I think Barry Area slider is up there for me. And the main thing you kind of got to work on Barry Area is kind of working on a changeup. He does a very good job of going east-west with a sinker, and then you got two breaking balls that are really, really good. Still lacking a little bit of that feel for a changeup, so kind of work on that a little bit. But overall, I think that's a very good pick at 23. Kasevich is pretty good. I've loved him for a little bit. And then Tucker Tillman is just one of my favorite picks of the entire draft. So, and Cade Doughty's pretty good. So, again, like I said before, if you manage to draft and sign all those guys, that's a huge, huge W in my book. That's yeah, solidly like an A+. You've done a very, very good job in this draft.
For sure. All right. So non-Blue Jays. And Brandon, we'll start with you here. I just love throwing you non-Blue Jays questions. Don't worry, we'll cover the Blue Jays a lot in just a few minutes here. But non-Blue Jays, who was your favorite? What team had your favorite draft?
Say the Mets.
The Mets? Hard to go wrong. You get Parada and Jet Williams.
Jet Williams. Even Blake Tewell, I was pretty high on earlier.
Yeah.
Even their later round pick was pretty good, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Yeah. All right, Mets. Can't go wrong there. What about you, Tyler?
So I do love the Mets haul that they got. I'm going to go a little bit outside the box here and go Twins.
Okay.
The Twins had a really, really good cleanup. Like, Brooks Lee at 8 was probably something they weren't imagining, considering he was the favorite for 1-1 as of like 3 p.m. yesterday. So getting
that
him
shows you how fast things change, by the way.
Yes.
Just to how quickly things can go into chaos.
We need a chaos counter. We're up to like 5 now.
There was a moment in the Woodward Sports Draft Show yesterday that I was on where Rogelio Castillo and I both threw our hands up and yelled chaos at the same time. And I want to record and gift that because that was hilarious.
Dude, I want that gift so badly now.
Anyway, so the Twins.
Yeah. So going back, we're going to go back on track here. But yeah, no, Brooks Lee being at 8 is pretty good value. I think that was one of the better steals of the first half of the draft, or like the first half of the first round anyways. Getting Prelip at 48 is pretty good value. This is a guy we thought was going to be in the first round after a pretty darn good bullpen session at the combine, where he looked a lot better, has more velocity. Slider spin rate was getting up at 3,000. Prelip himself, if he was fully healthy and didn't have Tommy John, would be a first overall pick consideration, in my opinion. The fastball probably needs some work on it, but the slider's a banger. He's got a serviceable changeup. I think that's a pretty good pick there. And with the Twins, I think they could do a pretty good job of developing that. And then Tanner Schoble at 68. I love Tanner Schoble. He's just an all-around, like, toolsy guy, like, turn it around this year. Lots of pretty good exit velocities. Used the old field. Power to the pull side was really burgeoning. A pretty good defender at shortstop. There's just a lot to love about that package there.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll answer this question. I don't always answer them, but I'll do this one. The homer in me wants to say the Tigers, because I really do think they did well, despite the fact they only had 2 picks and they were at 12 and 51, which there's a lot of space there. But Jace Jung is all I ever wanted. And Peyton Graham was a kind of a surprise. I didn't think he'd be there, and I think that was a really good pick, just taking what's coming to you. But since I'm not a homer, I'm going to say the Diamondbacks. I really do like what the Diamondbacks did yesterday. They said, okay, we'll take Drew Jones, no problem, take the price tag. So now you get Lawler and Drew Jones in a potential lineup together. That's pretty fun. And on top of that, you go and get Landon Sims, who to me is just the Max Meyer of this draft, except he's hurt, so he's not going in the first round. I think they have very similar, you know, approaches, the big slider, all that stuff. And then you get Ivan Melendez, who I guess only hit 31 home runs or 32 home runs. It seemed like he hit like a million. So you're getting a big power guy there with your third pick. And of course, you have to save money to be able to afford Jones. But by saving money there, you're getting some pretty good players that are, you know, college arm, college bat. So I really like what they did.
Yeah, I think something that we forget about with Melendez, too, is that he was a senior this year. So he's going to come with that discount anyways because of just how old he is. But it's still, like, a very, very, very good bat. Like, I'm pretty sure he broke the BB Corps college baseball home run record this year that Chris Bryant set back in 2013. I could be mistaken there. Is he 2012 or 2013? It's one of the two, but... The only knack really I have on Melendez is like, where is he fit defensively? It's like Jacob Berry with more, that's more filled out and just hits the ever loving piss out of the baseball and tries to kill the pitcher with a bat flip.
Well, let's also not forget that just 2 days ago, the Diamondbacks had a minor leaguer hit a 527 foot home run in Leandro Cedeno. So they're just, they want those first basemen hitting absolute tanks. They got the right guy. So, that's going to wrap up our draft talk, I think, but a very fun first day. Looking forward to day two here. Of course, by the time this comes out, the whole draft will probably be over and you guys will be like, what are you doing? But that's okay. I do want to talk about the Blue Jays though, because the Blue Jays have a really fun farm system going on right now, Brennan. And I want to dive into certain players specifically. I think there's probably more recognizable players that I could start with, but I'm hosting, so we're going to start with one of my guys. And that is a dude you've shown me recently, and that is Damiano Palmigiani. And I'm so sorry if I just botched that name, but yeah, I absolutely love this dude.
Oh, he's so fun, man. I got to say Vancouver is probably my favorite team to watch. Even that includes the Blue Jays. If the Vancouver Canadians are playing, I'm probably watching them over the Jays. But Palmigiani, man. They drafted him in 2018 in the 35th round, and he elected to go to university. And they picked him up 14th round last season. He hit the ground running, just absolutely killed it last season. Even better this season, he started in high A. He had 11 homers and slash line. He hit 256, 351, 508 with about 228 plate appearances. And just has absolutely killed it since he's been promoted to high A. Like four homers, hit one yesterday or Sunday, and batting over 300 as a on base percentage near 500. Like, it's just crazy how well he's hit the ground running.
And you know what? That to me has a lot to do with his swing. I absolutely adore his swing at the plate. It's quick, it's really short, and he's got some loft in it. I think that it's going to help him cover the plate. I think he'll be able to get to certain pitches. And Tyler, I don't know if you know a ton about Palmigiani, but if you haven't, I encourage you to go look at his swing because it's just gorgeous. I love what he could do. I think it's going to help him to keep growing and hitting. And I don't say this a lot, but I think that Palmigiani is going to be a guy that someone's going to catch wind of soon in the public space, and everybody's going to be like, oh, my God, where did this guy come from? He's got that kind of vibe to me.
And I think, like, the Jays have a lot of those guys in the later rounds. That's why I'm more excited for today and tomorrow in the draft, because I can see, oh, they're going to pick some really good players, but... No, man, like, he just, even to me, he kind of came out of nowhere. Just such a magnificent player. He's a nice guy, too. I've talked to him a few times. Doing my next prospect profile on him, so.
For sure. Well, if you guys are listening to this and you trust my word at all, Palmigiani has the Huth stamp of approval on this one. So another guy, Tyler, you probably know more about this guy. What about Ricky Tiedemann?
Yes, I love Tiedemann, dude, so much. Smitty got me on him. Whenever Smitty bangs that drum, you listen. Like, he's been on, like, Ricky Tiedemann was probably one of his first ones. He was all over.
We've said this before, but if Smitty says this is a dude, this is probably a dude. I think, he was Yuri Perez. Smitty was, he's had a few others, too. I know he really liked Canario at one point. Canario's doing pretty well in AA. So if Smitty says jump, it's probably good.
Yep. If you start hearing the Smitty banging in the background and it's slowly creeping up on you, that's when you know you have to listen, because then otherwise it'll attack you.
But anyway, keep going on Tiedemann, Tyler.
Oh, okay, cool. But yeah, no, we kind of touched on Tiedemann a little bit here. What was it? He was like, I can't remember.
91st.
Was it third overall. Round last year?
91st overall.
91st. Okay, cool. So my mind is still kind of trying to get the copy to work here, but Lakewood, it was a SoCal kid in high school, then went to Golden West College, then got drafted in the third round, and now we mentioned before, it's like he's hit the ground running. Like, just looking at the stat line, and then we have 103 strikeouts and 67 and 2/3 innings. It is really only allowing like 4.5 hits per 9 innings right now, and he's really doing a good job of limiting the walks. He's at A+ now, or high A.
Yeah,
Vancouver. Yeah, and like every single time I see a text from Smitty about Tiedemann, it's usually like the changeup's really good, the fastball is really good. I think the slider's also pretty darn good as well. He does a good job of limiting the long ball. It's like a 2.1 ERA through like 15 starts this year or something like that. Last I checked, it's a very, very good arm. And something I like too with Toronto is that they've kind of turned a corner on developing arms as well. Like, it used to be a little tough to watch, but now it's a fun progressive style of like they're really working with these guys and doing a very good job of tweaking the little things, making everything play out better. I just really like the way that they've really turned the corner there and started really developing these younger arms. And like we mentioned Barrier before, they could do the same thing there.
Yeah. They absolutely could. And Brennan, as a Blue Jays fan, I'm sure that you knew about Ricky Tiedemann at one point. Like, you knew that he was supposed to be pretty good. I don't know that anybody could have anticipated that he would do what he's doing right now. So how exciting is that for you?
So excited. I put him 12th in my top 10 Blue Jays. I wasn't even going to include him. And I was like, you know what? I kind of need to, since Kevin Smith was just traded. So I was like, you know, Ricky Tiedemann, I'm going to slot him at like 12. I'd say he's second easily. He's easily second. And I think he's quickly approaching Gabriel Moreno now as well. He's just, he's so good. And even in high A, you know, he did well, reasonably well in low A, but he hit high A and for the first like 20 innings. He allowed less than a 1 ERA.
And that's good.
That's, oh my god, man, it was insane. And they just started streaming this season, man. I love watching Tiedemann so much. They kind of have a bottleneck of really good prospects in the lower system, and as you move up, they have two starters in AAA, and everyone in AA just got there. So they have Trent Palmer and Adam Klopfenstein that just got there, and Yosef Zulueta as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned his name, because that's the one. I think that's the one pitcher better than Tiedemann. No, Tiedemann, I think, is the guy. But Yosef Zulueta is my guy. Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up, because I was going to very soon. It wasn't going to be that much longer. I'm sure you could have guessed. So what? I want your take here. What do you think about Zulueta?
His fastball's insane. It's an 80 grade fastball, in my opinion. His slider and curveball have also really developed this season. Like, we didn't get to see him at all last season. I think he pitched like an inning before he tore something in his knee. And then year before that, he missed it due to Tommy John. So we haven't really been able to see him. He's 24 and he started the season at Dunedin. But like, you can just see with his fastball, it's just that's fastball. Like, it's MLB ready right now. His secondary pitches are really coming along too. The one thing that I have against him is the control. And the command, it's kind of not there yet. Like, even in AA, I don't have the stats up right now, but I know that it's a rather high walks per nine. But I think as he pitches some more at that level, I think he's going to really get better at that. And he won the Futures game for the Yale team, so that was pretty nice.
So with his command, it is not easy to miss the first 3 years of your pro career because of Tommy John, COVID, and a torn ACL. In those 3 years, he threw three pitches. He averaged one pitch a year. And that's not really going to help your command at all. So I think there's still an element that he's getting back into it. I'm very high on Zulueta. I after I watched him three times, I texted a friend of mine and I said, I'm going to get skewered, but I have to put a frontline ceiling on this guy right now. And the response was, he better have three pitches that are 55 or better, even 60 or better. And I said, I think so. I really do. Because his fastball is absolutely amazing.
Fantastic.
He's hitting 101, I think is the highest I've seen him hit on Stadium Gun. So he's probably sitting in that, topping out 99. He may have hit triple digits. Stadium Guns usually run a little hot. But it's a great fastball. He broke an umpire's clicker with it. And this goes back to command. He was trying to hit the outside corner. He went inside, catcher missed it, hit the umpire's clicker shattered. I've never seen that on a baseball field before, but that was super fun.
I'd say that's really impressive.
It's very impressive, I think. It was direct impact. Maybe that's what he was aiming for, right?
Aim exactly. Small, small. Then it's 80 command right there.
But I think his one of his breaking pitches, slider, is the main secondary for me. And I think that probably approaches plus territory too. So I think you're looking at a ceiling of 70 fastball, 60 slider, and his changeup is really good. It's got nice arm side fade. He's got good deception with it. And I think you're getting into that 55-60 conversation. Again, this is all just ceiling. I'm not saying this is a frontline starter. There's work to do to get to his ceiling. And his curveball's not bad. That's the thing. It's his fourth pitch. He uses it as a fourth pitch every time I see him. But it's not bad. And I think he can get to at least average with it. So all he really needs is to get to 45 command. He needs fringe command. And I think you have a really solid starter in the middle of a rotation. And that to me is, and it's easy velo. There's not a lot of effort that goes into this. So the conversations I had with people when I was starting to pump up Zulueta, he's 24 in low A, in high A. He's just better than these guys. And I'm like, well, one, yes, he's better than these guys. And two, 99 at the top of the zone is going to play pretty well regardless of how old the guy he's facing is.
Well, even, man, like, at the start of the season, people wanted him in the Blue Jays bullpen. As you know, the Blue Jays bullpen is not fun to watch sometimes. But, like, 100 plays. And then when you add a slider, like, huge wipeout action. Like, fastball slider, both at least 60. I think he probably could. I would wait another year I think he could be a starter very well, but like if you just like want to skyrocket him, he's going to be a Rule 5 pick at the end of the season too. But if you want to just skyrocket him and put him in the bullpen right now, he wouldn't be the worst option in the Toronto Blue Jays bullpen, to say the least.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he'll be added to the 40. The Blue Jays will absolutely have to protect him. But if you Google his name, you can go find stories from the spring training before he tore his ACL, this spring training. Yeah. He constantly impresses the front office, according to MLB.com reporting. And that is something certainly to take hold of. And I'm a huge Zulueta fan. I think that he is one of the better pitchers that I've ever gotten the chance to watch on a stream. And I am the stream half of Field and Stream. So I watch a lot of pitchers on stream. So I'm really excited for him. I know Jeff Ponce got out to watch him recently, and I think Jeff liked him a little bit. He had a tough first inning, but we trust Jeff. So that's always good, too. Now, I want you to talk about, Brennan, your guy that you've been bugging me about to get on, and that is Spencer Horwitz.
I love the guy, man. He had a 27 or 29. I can't remember. It's either 27 or 29. He had 27 or 29 game hit streak in high A. And that's when it clicked to me last season. I was like, this guy is insane. First baseman, his defense, I'll just get out of the way right now. It's not very good. But you don't need defense from a first baseman. They've also been giving him reps in left field. As you know, the Jays don't really have a great outfield depth. So if he's average or even slightly below average, I think he has a place on this team. His hitting is insane, though. Last season, he walked more than he struck out, which, again, I absolutely love. But he usually always hits around 300. He usually has an on-base percentage of around 400. 10 homers last season when they were at Ron Tonkin Field, Hillsboro's, their home stadium, but not very good dimensions for left-handed hitters. This season, he had 10 homers with New Hampshire. He had two last season and like 16 plate appearances. Already hit one with Buffalo this season. Like, he's just – it's plus-plus hidden and plus power. Obviously, again, defense, not great. Not great runner, but just with that bat, it plays. We're going to see him in the MLB next season, and I think people kind of underrate him due to where he was picked in the 2019 draft. I think he was 24th. Round. Like, it's just, man, he's so good. I can't stop talking about him. I'm sorry. He's just so good.
You're on a podcast, so talking is kind of what you need to do.
Of course. I don't know, man. I just think he's
well. Let's add some context into this. Matt Thompson wrote his report for Prospects Live, gave him a 70 hit tool. And when you're projecting out a 70 hit tool, that's a dude who can get bat to ball. That is amazing. And you mentioned he walks, he's got a good approach at the plate. It looks like to me that he's added more loft into his swing to try to access a little bit more power. And it's not that he's selling out for power, so he'll still be able to get to that hit tool, but he's lifting the ball a little bit more. And I think, if it's me, just from what I've watched to prepare for this podcast, mostly is what I've watched of Spencer Horwitz, I think you're looking at a guy when he gets to the majors. I think you're looking more at doubles power, which is not bad. I mean, first baseman, you kind of want him to hit tanks, but I think he may hit some home runs, but I think you're probably looking at 10, 15 home runs a year, but mostly doubles. But if you have a guy with a double plus hit tool, that'll play pretty well because he's gonna hit what 280 maybe with a bunch of doubles, and that is if not higher than 280 with a double plus hit tool. Let's be honest, but I think the power is going to be more fringe to average if I'm writing out a scouting report right now.
I could see that. No, like he hasn't had that like huge power season yet, and he may not, but. He does have some power, which is still nice.
So, Tyler, let me jump in with you here. I don't know how much you've watched Spencer Horwitz, if at all. I know you focus a lot on the draft. But when I talk about he added loft to his swing without selling out for power, can you kind of talk about what that looks like? Like, what would selling out for power look like versus just adding a little bit of loft to try to access more?
I think with selling out for power, you'd be looking at someone. I'll give an example just from this year's draft that hasn't gone yet. Trey Faltini from Texas is a good example. Like last year it was like we're looking at a guy who could be the top shortstop in the class. And now this year the strikeouts went up. Really, it was just like the power came in and it obviously worked. Like there's no question the power is an uptick in its outfields now. But now you're looking at a guy that's striking out way more than he was last year. So you're kind of looking at like chase rate, you know, how does the plate discipline work with someone that's now added, you know, essentially good power to their bat, but now they're struggling to make contact with the ball, essentially, is what we're looking at.
Yeah, for sure. So let's stay with you, Tyler. How much do you know about Aurelvis Martinez?
Not as much as I should, honestly.
Okay. So to me, I don't know that he's selling out for power right now, but that's kind of what a stat line of selling out for power would look like. I think he's just 20 playing in double A. But anytime he hits the ball, it's a home run or a double or something extra bases. I don't know that he knows what a single is. And he's hitting, the last I checked, which was a couple weeks ago, he was hitting like 214. But he had close to 20 home runs on the year. It's lower than 214 now, Brennan?
I think it's like 203 or something like that.
201. I got the slash in front of me.
But what's his slug, Tyler? You got the slash. What's the slug?
201, 271, 446.
That is stupid, right? And he's an aggressive swinger at the plate. And that's where the chase comes in. That's where the strikeout rates, because the strikeout rate is enormous at the moment. But again, he's 20 years old in Double A. Like, he's young and he's still impacting a baseball to the point where he's slugging for whatever you said, which is absolutely nuts considering the average is 201. So 30% Brennan
strikeout rate, by the way.
That's what?
30%.
Yeah. Yeah, right? 30% strikeout rate. So I mean, Brennan, how stupid is this season he's having?
It's anytime he hits a single, it's literally a bloop. Like, he just misses it, but he hits it just in the right spot that it just goes over the first baseman's head and lands past him. He's so young, and he missed his age 18 development season, and he also only spent, like, I think he had less than 100 plate appearances in high A last season. So, like, they're rushing him, and he still hit 19 homers. Like, the power is still there. He just needs to learn to, hey, that's a slider. Don't swing at the slider. Hey, that's a changeup. Let's hang back a little bit and then hit it. And that's going to come with age. He has the exact same birthday as Francisco Alvarez, by the way.
Well, Francisco Alvarez is in AAA, so what's yeah. Arelvis doing?
Yeah, I know, right? I saw that. I was like, damn, I guess Francisco Alvarez is a better prospect. But no, like, I see a bunch of Jays fans just being like, oh, this guy sucks, you know, just trade him. He's worth nothing. It's like, you got to understand the context. Yes, he has an incredibly high K rate. Yes, he does not. He swings at fastballs. He hits fastballs and swings at everything, and that doesn't help when he sees off-speed stuff, and pitchers know that because he's in Double A. But as he's going to repeat the level for sure, I don't think there's any chance that he doesn't start next season in High A. Double A. But he's going to get better, and his power—it's at least a 60, easily a 60, probably a 65 or 70. That's how much power he has. Just his swing is beautiful. And it's not really the type of prospect you want to trade, especially when his value is so low, because the team would say, oh, he has a 201 average and he has a 30K percentage. So, like, hold on. Don't rush. He's going to be a good player.
And you know what? In High A, he would be doing nothing other. He'd probably hit a little better and strike out a little less, but now he's getting pitch recognition. He's seeing, you know, bigger sliders and curveballs, breaking pitches than he would, better changeups. He's seeing better everything than he would in High A. And I think that's good for him long term. So, Tyler, it's a question to me with Arelvis of how much can you improve that pitch recognition? And does that just come by seeing pitches like this?
Sorry, I was tuned out for the entire part of that. Can you repeat that?
Yeah. So when it comes to improving pitch recognition, does that just come from seeing pitches?
I think it's a mix of, like, the development crew with the organization trying to help him identify the spin more than it is, like, just trying to let him do his own thing and try and recognize it from there. I feel like if you're going to have a guy struggling with recognizing spin out of the hand, you should definitely have someone within the organization tell him, like, hey, this is what a slider looks like. Try and see if you can identify the seams coming out. This is really, like, the dumbest way to explain it. In all honesty.
But can you see the dot? Can you see the red dot, right? That's what you're looking at.
Yeah. Brennan's laughing at me right now because I was so impressed.
That's okay. Okay, well, let's give you a different question, Tyler. How about this one? When you talk about and maybe Arelvis is the wrong guy to use for this, but there's a difference between raw and game power. And raw power, Arelvis Martinez, easily plus, maybe double plus raw power. I mean, he's got some legitimate pop in his bat. Game power, I guess he's still probably above average right now just because he's still just hitting tanks and extra base hits, even though and that's all he's hitting. But the game power plays off the hit tool.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's a question of how low can his hit tool be to still get to his plus power?
Oh man, that's a good question. With Arelvis, I feel like if you're gonna have, like, actual plus in-game power, you're gonna be kind of hitting closer to, like, maybe 230, 240. I feel like that would probably play better with the kind of power that he has. And you mentioned double plus potential in that thing. Like, when we talk about raw power, we're talking about what you see outside again, like batting practice, for example. Like, how does that ball jump off the bat in batting practice? And how do you kind of judge from there? Like, Garrett Mitchell, for example, we've talked about this in the past where it's like he can slug the absolute piss out of a ball in BP, but he cannot hit for power in game. So, like I said, I think probably getting close to like 230, 240, you're probably going to get fully like 60 grade power out of Orelvis.
Yeah. And so in terms of grades, I had this conversation a lot with RIP Joe Drake, before he left us to go work for the Orioles. And it was a matter of how much distance can you put between a hit grade and a power grade? Because a guy, you can't really, it's hard to put a 40 hit and expect 55 power. And Orelvis might be breaking all those barriers. But I to me, it's so hard to have any, at the maximum, a two grade difference between those two. So if he's got, you know, a 40 hit, it's hard for me to want to say he's got more than 50 power, especially in game.
Agreed on that one.
Yeah. So that was just to put some context into what we're talking about in terms of, you know, what the hit and power might look like. Real quick, Brennan, who are some other guys in this Blue Jays system that you think are worth highlighting? Who's somebody else you think is worth talking about?
Addison Berger skyrocketed on the scene this season. Hit 18 homers last season in high A as a 21-year-old. Impressive, but like he didn't even pop out to me. But 14 homers and I think it was like 200 plate appearances or something in high A. He was promoted to a double A recently, and he's hitting 525 plate appearances, like all singles. But he just hit the ground running, like Damiano Palmigiani, and then to high A, and then Spencer Horwitz when he was promoted to to Triple A. I have to mention Leo Jimenez, solely because he had a 500 OBP last season in a pretty darn large sample size. I believe it was I don't have it right here. It was about 300 plate appearances, and he gets hit by the pitch a lot. And I spoke to one of his teammates, and he straight up told me that's what Leo Jimenez does. He got hit twice yesterday with the pitch.
Okay, so a couple good names there. And we're going to jump into our final question, the gauntlet. The gauntlet. I don't know if Tyler's ready or not. He almost never is. But
hey, I am ready for this one.
All right, are you going draft or are you going pro ball?
I'm going pro ball.
Wow, okay. All right, look at that.
Pro ball. So I'm prepared for this one, unlike the last question, in case we have to leave it in, because
we're leaving that in.
Oh, we're leaving it in? Cool. Oh, great. Much of a stupid idiot I am.
You answered the question.
I
mean,
anyway. I answered the question in, like, the most, like, talk it down to, like, I'm five version of it.
But that's what we're doing here. We're talking about what we see. We got to make it understandable. You did great. We're leaving this conversation in. We're leaving it all in. We're going. We're doing it live. So, the final question, Brennan: who is a prospect, and it can be Blue Jays for you, it can be anybody, that you think deserves just a little bit more love? We always end with that because we want to hype up some prospects who need it. So, for example, I will start, and I'll go with Tampa Bay's JJ Goss. I love JJ Goss. His fastball, I didn't get the readouts on his most recent start with his fastball, but he struck out 9 guys in 5 innings. His slider is really good. In this last outing against Lynchburg, which is the Cleveland affiliate, he showed a changeup too, and his changeup looked pretty nice. It was a little inconsistent in terms of release. He'd throw it high a little bit, but when he got it low in the zone, it got some nice arm side run, some nice arm side fade. I think that's a good pitch as well. Plays well off his fastball, and dude at this level, especially, just can't touch his slider right now. And what I like most about JJ Goss is that his arm, when he goes through the motion, it looks elastic. I mean, it's such a whippy arm, and it's a smooth whip. there's not a lot of effort, and he generates a lot of arm speed as he delivers the ball. And I love J.J. Goss. I think the world of him, and of course he's in Tampa's system, so that's usually a good thing. So it's J.J. Goss for me. I think he's going to be a huge name eventually. I really like him. Tyler, we'll go with you because I'm just so interested since you're going to say a Pro Bowl guy.
Yeah, surprise. I'm going to switch it up on you. So I'm sticking with the Blue Jays.
Okay.
Chad Dallas.
Chad Dallas. Brent and I were just talking about Chad Dallas. That's the funny thing. So go. What do you got on Chad Dallas?
Cool. So I'm kind of just giving like a little background on him too, because I did watch him last year with Tennessee. Came from JUCO in Texas. Nickname is what? Cheese?
Cheese.
Cheese. Loved the nickname, by the way. But yeah, no, it's a guy that went from being a JUCO guy to he is now the Friday night guy for Tennessee last year in essentially their breakout year. Got drafted, what, like eighth round, something like that. I do like the arsenal he does have. The fastball doesn't really play up as well. It's like low 90s, gets up to 95, just from what I remember. But it's a really, really good mix of breaking pitches. Sweepy. Cutters in there. I think the cutter is the best pitch at the moment, but he's got a pretty good slider, or like a slider curve. It's like a slurve mix, essentially. Mm-hmm. Changeup's kind of lagging behind a little bit. I don't know how much the development has gone on with that this year. Brandon, you can chime in if you want to on that. And the control and command's kind of a little bit iffy after he was pretty good with that in college, but I still like the profile with Dallas. And hopefully one day he'll live up to his name by actually throwing cheddar.
Yeah, the cutter is good, and the changeup, I think, has taken a step forward from the last time you saw it, too, because he's using it now in strikeout situations, at least from the highlight tapes I've seen. I have not watched a full Chad Dallas start, but, Brent, I'll let you talk about Chad Dallas.
He had his best start. His control, like Tyler said, had been an issue prior to last start, but I think he struck out like 8 and only walked 1. He allowed like 1 home run. Just a fantastic start. I haven't seen a lot of Dallas, but from what I can tell, he has a good pitch mix. And I see Tyler saw the gif that I just sent in the group chat about
80 grade dancer. 80 yeah, grade dancer.
So good. I did it with the dumbbells yesterday. I have to stoop a row, a triple as well, but. Oh man, no, I like him. From what I've seen, like, even though sometimes he does run into control issues, he does have good stuff, and I think that plays up.
And so Chad Dallas, name, that's Tyler's guy. Love it. It's always fun when Tyler gets into pro ball. Brennan, who's your guy?
I'm gonna go with Zach Veen.
Zach Veen.
Yeah, I do have a little remorse with the Jays picking Austin Martin above Zach Veen, but what can you do? I think with the steals that he's had in high A and he's added power, I just think he's a pretty darn good prospect for the Rockies, who have now a lot of good outfield prospects.
Yeah, it's that, and it's just look at the futures game. If you watched it, a lot of guys in the futures game will try to sell out for power in that game because it's a showcase for them. Like, they're having fun, right? It's a fun game for them. It's an honor to be at the futures game. Zach Veen just went to work. He hit 2 singles. And this is, to me at least, a power-first bat. I don't think the hit tool is going to be bad, but his power is so much better. But he didn't care. He's just like, hey, I'm just going to knock some singles and move on with my life in the futures game. So I love Zach Veen. I like that. That's a good one, Brennan. So one more time, Brennan, give us where people can find your work, where they can find you on Twitter.
So Twitter, it's Brennan, B-R-E-N-N-A-N, _L_D. I need to pick a new Twitter username. And then you can find my work at BlueJaysNation.com. I tend to write about prospects, but I also complain a lot about how bad the team does on occasion. And trades and roles. Yeah, it's been a tough season for me. I saw early in May that there's issues that they need to figure out. But yeah, you can find me at BlueJaysNation.com. And
absolutely, you can
read my work.
For sure. Absolutely do that. Check out Brennan's work. Tyler, I'm sure you're just, 2 days away from getting into the 2023 class, which looks pretty good.
Yep. I will say tomorrow at this time, I will be landing in Tampa. We got PG National this week. Me and Smitty are going to go crank out good content this week.
Nice.
Also, if you remember Cole Wilcox, We've got a little something going on with him tomorrow, so that's going to be fun.
Love it. Cole, we had Cole on the podcast. Cole is an awesome dude. So is Nick Schnell. Schnell's back playing. He's in. He's J.J. Goss's teammate in Charleston. So root for him.
He's doing pretty well, too, I think.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well. You love to see it. Hopefully we can get Cole back, too. Both of them are great guys. And they put out good content on the DNR podcast. But the 2023 class, all I'm hoping is that Dylan Cruz becomes a Tiger. Beyond that, all I can say is thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Brennan, for being here. Of course, Tyler, always good to talk to you. This has been Field and Stream as a part of the Prospects Live Podcast Network.